Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune is with us once again. If you've questions for Joanna, afternoon@newstalk.com is the email address to contact. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Right, very opposite question. First off, given that I think they've already made some offers today already, our son worked really hard and managed to do enough to get the points he wanted, hopefully, which means he'll be getting the course he wants and moving to Dublin for college. He's a responsible lad and a very hard worker, but as a parent, what can I do to prepare him for this next chapter? Most of his friends will be staying nearer to home, but he will be moving up to Dublin, so he'll need to make new friends and fend for himself a bit more without that social support. He knows the basics of cooking and cleaning, I hope, but can we do anything at this stage? I want him to know the door is always open, and along with the pressure of college, he should be enjoying himself too. He is so conscientious, and I know what a big step this is.
Do you know, Sean, and today is the day the first offers have come out. So hopefully it all has gone to plan for this guy. But it is a big step for him. That transition from secondary school to third level education, whatever course they're going to do, is a massive transition because now it's all being handed over to them. Even if he wasn't staying at home, even going to college, there would be a lot more personal responsibility, self-regulation, managing your own workload. Case nobody's chasing them for homework like they did in secondary school. So a whole lot of kids are going to be facing a huge transition now, and it doesn't often get a lot of airtime and thinking about that. The other thing in this, though, that really jumps out to me is it's not just a big step for kids making this transition. Mm-hmm. It's a massive step for parents because as parents, you're really losing a lot of the direct influence that you had, you know, when they were in secondary school and they were still very much, you know, come on now, do this and do that and do the other and I'll drive you here and I'll drive you there. And now they're out in the world. And that does take a leap of faith in a lot of ways. But when this parent in this letter here is talking about how responsible he is, how hardworking he is, and then saying, what can I do to prepare him? I just want to say you have prepared him. That's why he's so responsible and hardworking. You've prepared him for this. And we have to trust that what we've done for our children to get them this far is going to stand to them. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to walk out of our door into college and, you know, be nailing independent life. But we also have to let them wobble, knowing, and he knows that the parents are there to lean on. You've been really clear about this. The door is open. You can come back to us. You can lean on us. All of that's there. I think you've got to trust you've done enough. You've got to say he might wobble. I would say he definitely maybe might wobble as he's going forward, but that's okay. That's how he's going to learn what works and doesn't work. The main things that kids need to know as they're transitioning into third level is, especially when they're going to be living away from home, is basic budgeting. And it sounds silly, but it's really, really important that whatever living allowance they have, that they've got to cover certain costs and it has to go a certain distance before the next payment is there. Self-directed learning is another thing. They have to be able to manage workload, study load, when things have to be handed in, and basic self-care that includes their living environment. But this parent seems to be saying, Sean, like the basics of cooking and cleaning, optimistically maybe, are understood here. He sounds ready.
Yeah. They've done a lot, actually.
Absolutely.
Fair dues to them. Yeah.
I just think there's a bit of minding yourself as your child is going to make this transition. And it is okay to say you're nervous, you're anxious, and you're always going to wonder, did I do enough? Could I have taught more? Could I have done? Actually, one of the ways to find out, did you do enough, is to let him go and try it. Mm-hmm. And then he's going to come back and come here having a clue about this and go, oh, overlooked that. We can fix it now. You know, so it's a collaborative process, but there's no harm in wobbling a bit.
Yeah.
And the whole thing about the social bit in this really struck me. You know, most of his friends are going to be staying nearer to home. He's moving up to Dublin from wherever this is. So he has to make new friends. And, you know, all of that, he should be enjoying himself. Hold in mind that the first weeks of college are really focused on promoting social connection. That's my way of describing that beginning chaos and pandemonium and join this club or this society. And there's this night out and that night out. He will make friends in college.
Yeah. Only funny enough, we were talking to somebody from Trinity Students Union, who was, or from DCU Students Union, I should say, who was saying that the experience for a lot of students at third level, because they're commuting far more than ever before, yeah, and that kind of stuff, that they don't have those opportunities, and that they're you know, things like clubs are trying to move it around to the afternoons, but even that doesn't work because obviously they have to go to lectures as well. So this young man is lucky. He's getting
absolutely
to do this.
And it really struck me the kind of confidence this parent is asserting. He'll be moving up to Dublin and studying there, that there's clearly a plan in place, because there are loads of parents today delighted their kids are getting their preferences in offers, but immediately scrambling for where are they going to live? How are we going to afford it? And a lot of young people are going to be doing quite long commutes. So you're absolutely right. That is going to a number of young adults I work with are actually doing that at the moment, the very long commute, and it absolutely affects their social life.
We toilet trained our 4.5-year-old boy around 2 years ago. It all seemed to go pretty well for the first year at least. Around a year ago, he started having occasional accidents in creche. These got more frequent. Then he started having number two accidents, and this has continued. We could have two accidents a day, or we could go 3 or 4 days having none. We're at our wit's end with it. There was no major family changes or life events that coincided with this regression. While he has had a series of changes to his carers in creche over the years, this issue started well before that. We've also talked to him about why this keeps happening, and he just says he doesn't know. I've run the gamut of reasons in my own head. He's lazy. He's looking for attention. Is there an undiagnosed physical reason? We brought him to the doctor to rule out anything physical. He seems completely oblivious to his accidents. He would sit in his soiled underwear all day if we didn't make the change and clean himself up. He seems completely unbothered and blasé about it. We've mostly approached this with kindness and patience, but I'll admit our patience is wearing thin. And I'm worried for how this will play out when he starts school very soon. Any advice or insight would be very gratefully received.
This is tricky because of his age and the sort of elimination process they've already gone through, because the first step is always go to your GP to rule out a UTI, urinary tract infection, or constipation, which could be a physical cause or something else. But they've done that. The second step would be then to explore stress or emotional causes. And again, they're saying there's nothing. And certainly there's nothing to the adult mind, okay? Just to be aware of that. You know, children do think a bit differently. And then the third step would be to take the best way I could describe it is a calm, clear, consistent response. Go back to what previously worked and start again from that point, you know, and you could consult an expert in that process. Now, you've been to the doctor, you've done a few other things, but when I'm talking about an expert, I mean somebody who specializes in, I suppose, complex toilet training. You know, not your standard run of the mill. And there is a pediatric nurse specialist, Anne Costigan. You'll find this person will find her online on social media under the very apt handle Poo and the Loo. And, you know, you could book a consultation to go a little bit deeper into what's going on from a sensory play perspective. And we would always apply sensory play when it's something to do with the body, because it's the best way to put kids in their body in the now moment and move things through in a physical way. One of the things that I often do with kids with this kind of struggle is I might get a balloon and fill it with a funnel with damp sand, and it gets that until the bulb of the balloon is full, and then just have them sit and squeeze it out, have them pause, have them squeeze it out. And it's just mirroring that kind of squeeze, release, wait, release of going to the number two, as this parent is saying. There's something about this child not noticing that they've soiled themselves and apparently content to sit in it, because that wouldn't be very comfortable, Sean. Like,
no.
You know, there's the sensory piece, there's the smell. So it is, there's something that this kid is not connecting. He may be very busy-minded. This could be a kid who's so consumed with what he's doing in terms of his play activity in the moment or whatever little activity he's involved in, that he's not catching those cues from his body. Hey, you need to go, you need to go, you need to go. Oh dear, you've gone. He's just not attuning to those. So he might need a lot more directive of let's hit pause and we're going to go to the toilet and check and try to get him almost on a number two schedule where you're guiding and directing him, but telling him, let's hit pause, what's happening in our bodies, let's go check, now come back, until he can regulate it himself. Because given he did acquire training, full toilet training for a year, then there was regression. So we know he can do it, but we don't know why he couldn't sustain it.
Yeah.
I wonder about distractibility, and often kids his age are so consumed with the joy of whatever they're involved in that they just aren't picking up those body cues. Obviously, we need to get him to do that, but it might be that he needs more structured approach.
Yeah. Now, they say he's 4.5 now, so they said they'd got him toilet trained by the time he was 2.5.
Yeah.
That's a little on the young side, isn't it?
Well, I mean, people are going to, I'd be interested in what people listening think. Kids can be trained from when they show signs of readiness is the best way we usually would describe it. When, you know, they're telling you when they've soiled themselves, oh, hey, I've gone, I need to change my pull up or whatever it is. When they're going longer periods without going, when they're curious about the toilet, these are all signs they're ready to go. A lot of children then, parents are initiating the training maybe before the child is showing those signs because they're trying to get them ready for preschool. And it's a different kind of agenda timeline on that. But 2.5, yeah, kids would be trained around that. I would always say don't rush it unless you have to. Don't hurry it, because whether you train them at 2 or 3, they'll be trained by 3. You know, so there's no harm in waiting until they're really, really ready and making it easier for them because they're bought into the process. But 2.5, it's the younger side, but it's not exceptional.
Yeah. Our daughter started creche a couple of months ago. She's now 15 months old, generally quite settled there. She's always happy to go in there. There are no tears at drop off or pick up. Our issue is that 4 different times now she's come home with bite marks. There seems to be a child in the creche that is biting and, from the looks of it, picking on her. We have raised it with staff and are very concerned, but at the same time, we both work full time and finding a creche place in the first place was almost impossible. So while we would like to take her out of this one, there's nowhere else to go. Our daughter does not seem bothered by it at all. But as our parents, we definitely are. I know that biting can be normal, but I'm worried she's being singled out. How do you get a 1-year-old to stand up for themselves in a situation like this? What should we do?
So a 1-year-old isn't going to stand up for themselves. Mm. You know, a 1-year-old is very dependent on their carers to stand up for them and to defend and mind them. So get that out of your head, because we can't put that on a 1-year-old child. It is, like this parent says, development. And we get a number of questions about biting. Mm. Normally the biter rather than the bitee. But, you know, it's very normal for toddlers to bite. It, you know, very typical because of, you know, they haven't got full language to express themselves. They're quite sensory and they might be cutting teeth. And there's lots of reasons. But all of my explaining of that, Sean, does not excuse that it's happening. And I find this really interesting because it's happened on 4 different occasions, the same child apparently being targeted by the biter. And again, now I'm not saying the biter is, I don't want to pathologize that, but when there is one child who it seems to be, now we don't know that, by the way, this child could be biting liberally all around them, but that is targeted repeated behavior. So most childcare environments that I would be familiar with would have a protocol for dealing with biting because it happens so often. This is what we do. We shadow the child. We track the child. We look at, is there a pattern to this? Is it coming in or out of transitions? Is it a particular child? We use distraction, redirection. You know, there's a protocol in place. So I'm not picking that up from, you know, that it's been raised with staff. But if a child has been bitten, it would really be the staff who would raise it with the parents saying, yeah, child was bitten today, here's the incident report. We've spoken to the other parents. They might not tell you who the other child is, but there is a protocol for dealing with it. I think as parents, ask for a sit-down meeting with the care team to view the protocol, the policy they have, and review the implementation of it. Where are we at with the protocol? At what stage do we review it? Because again, it's not unusual for a child to be on a restricted attendance until the biting is under control. That's the biter on the restricted attendance, not the bitee. So I'm just not clear how it's been dealt with. So it's hard for this parent to say, I need my child to deal with it. That can't happen. What you need is that the care team are dealing with it, I'd go back to basics and request a formal sit-down meeting.
Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.